This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1. This is WCRS Community Radio 98.3, 102.1. You're listening to The Other Side of the News. Hi, this is Bob Fetrakis in the studio here with Christopher Costin, a photographer who was recently, well, that would be last weekend, recently in Chicago, taking pictures of that NATO summit you've heard about. Christopher, welcome to The Other Side of the News.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And as we look into this issue, why again were you in Chicago? Were you troublemaking?
No, I don't think we were there to make trouble. We basically wanted to go and see why there was a state-sanctioned conference of NATO war criminals meeting in one of our own cities. We wanted to basically go there to protest the fact that the United States government would be having a coalition of states of anachronistic military cartel meeting on our own land or anywhere in the world. We basically went there to protest their presence.
And as part of the protesting the presence, take us chronologically through your trip there. You arrived when?
We arrived Friday night, but we wouldn't make it into the streets of downtown Chicago until Saturday morning. We basically took a train from our hotel by O'Hare into downtown Chicago, where the police were checking people's bags on the trains.
With a warrant, they had a proper warrant.
No, not at all.
I forgot that was before 9/11. Now they just kind of
for security purposes and to keep us safe from ourselves. People's bags were checked and dogs were on the metro trains.
It kind of gives it that Third Reich feel.
Yeah, it did. When we would get off the train, the Chicago Department of Sanitation had their snow plows, giant snow plows and trash trucks lined up intersections to create an enormous security cordon in downtown Chicago. The rooftops, you could see Department of Homeland Security snipers and a police force and police presence that's probably unprecedented in this country's history. I cannot recall in my time or even in photographs seeing just the sheer amount of police officers that were present in downtown Chicago on May 19th.
And were the police professional and well-behaved?
Actually, for the most part, they were during the days, just in their interactions with average people, tourists and citizens of that city. It wasn't until a protest march kind of just randomly happened between a few groups that were meeting to discuss, possible actions in regard to the NATO conference. March started down Michigan Avenue around noon on Saturday, May 19th, which was growing in size, and the police presence just to monitor the small march was simply overwhelming and ludicrously excessive, could be basically interpreted as a way to intimidate us out of any further actions. They harassed us and tried to dictate where we went the entire day. The march went into the night, so we dealt with them all day long.
And what was it like dealing with Chicago's finest all day long?
There was a lot of threats, you know, they were very threatening. They were menacing in their behavior. You know, they regularly, anybody who would just get onto a sidewalk would just either, would basically just be thrown back into the street. There were times when, you know, police were taunting us, and the conduct on their end was, you know, professional at times. In order, you know, I can see how they were trying to, you know, keep the peace, so to speak, and keep the march from shutting down more traffic than it probably already was. But at times, their conduct was extremely intimidating and heavy-handed, to put it lightly.
What do you mean by heavy-handed?
People were arrested on Saturday, usually just violently just grabbed out of the street, sometimes just randomly.
Do you think that was random? Were they just random? Were they targeting people?
On Saturday, I'm not sure. The following day, they were absolutely targeting specific individuals, but on Saturday, you would just see every now and then just somebody would just be randomly arrested, either for, you know, getting too close to the police or veering off the path that the police sort of designated for us as we went along.
Now, you were in Pittsburgh a few years ago, were you not?
I was, for the G20 summit.
Yeah, how would you compare what you witnessed in Pittsburgh, where they actually had a sound cannon, and what you saw in Chicago?
They had a long range acoustic device in Chicago as well. It was deployed, but it was not used on Sunday. The sheer number of police officers far outweighed the amount of police officers in Pittsburgh for the G20. In Pittsburgh, I mean, tear gas was used and, you know, percussion grenades, which were not used, but on Sunday,
black vans would roll up and just grab people off the street. Was that happening in Chicago?
That would happen after the state-sanctioned, or city-sanctioned march from Grant Park to McCormick Place on Sunday, May 20th. After the ceremony that was led by Iraq Veterans Against the War, a lot of veterans returned their medals by throwing them back over the barriers that cordoned off McCormick Place during the first day of the NATO summit. Veterans were throwing their medals back over the barrier in protest of the war and to begin the process of healing and reconciliation. After that city-permitted march, which was basically a way of the city saying that we can have, you know, a right to freely assemble and to have a right to free speech, but it has to be in a given time period. It has to be in a city-permitted and sanctioned area, which ends at an exact time. After that was over, and the crowd did not feel like giving up their rights or conceding their rights to the Chicago Police Department. People were specifically targeted, and this is after the police began beating the crowd with batons. People were specifically targeted. We would hear it on the radio, them describing, you know, say somebody in a white bandana and a blue shirt, or describing individuals very exactly, and they would go into the crowd, grab one person, you know, three or four of them, and just throw them in the back of a Chicago police truck, and it would drive off.
We're listening here to Christopher Costin, a Columbus-based photojournalism. You're listening to the other side of the news. Did that type of activity cause you any anxiety? Were you worried about that?
It was pretty nerve-wracking to have to be completely surrounded and outnumbered, you know, 9-10 to 1 by police and full-on paramilitary riot gear, and all we have is just the clothes we're wearing. They became extremely aggressive, pushing back crowds, moving in unison with each other, knocking people over, you know, pushing back when people have nowhere to go, people landing on top of each other and being beaten for not being able to get up off of the ground. Yeah, I mean, it's very scary. When I moved in just to simply take a photograph of what was happening, I was clubbed in the shoulder and the elbow by the Chicago police with a baton. And then basically had nowhere to go, nowhere to turn around. Basically, just me and a reporter for the local CBS station were just trapped in the madness.
So you saw people actually being beaten?
Oh, yeah. I mean, people had, you know, their foreheads. There's a guy sitting next to me who had a gash in his forehead about 2.5 inches long. I mean, it was just bleeding out of his face. When somebody leaned over to help him up, a police officer jammed the end of his baton into his mouth, breaking his front 2 teeth in half. There was, I mean, multiple... The word medic was screamed repeatedly.
We're the Chicago police. Welcome to Chicago again. We kicked your granddad's ass in 1968. So, the Chicago police, once again living up to their reputation. Was there an attempt to march on the mayor's mansion, his official dwelling?
There was. There was not just an attempt. There actually was a march on ex-Goldman Sachs employee Rahm Emanuel's residence. I did not partake in it, but there was an action that led to a march to his house.
Now, where was the NATO summit occurring at? Where was the actual physical location?
It was at
the important people.
The convention center. These war criminals. They met at the convention center.
We should clear it up. Why do you perceive them as war criminal? You and perhaps many of the other demonstrators.
The war in Afghanistan and Iraq were both based on false pretenses. They're heavily corporate. The amount of corporate influence going into the policy and decision-making that led up to the war was immense. It was a unilateral action, for the most part, that was not sanctioned by the United Nations Security Council, thus making it an illegal war. The amount of civilians that were killed, numbers in the hundreds of thousands now, the people that are displaced, disfigured, homeless, imprisoned, disappeared. I mean, it's just, you can't even make a list to describe them all. If that's not an illegal action, I don't know what is.
I think it's the NSA calling you. Please report to Homeland Security, Krister Kostin. The photos you took, which people will be able to see at freepress.org, could you describe some of the photographs that you took to be published at freepress.org?
Most of the subject matter I wanted to share with people that I figured would not make it into the mainstream media reports. We're just covering the sheer amount of police in the area who were pretty much armed to the teeth with federal money. The Department of Homeland Security and other federal agencies donated, which comes basically from White House directives, armed the Chicago Police Department to the point of being a paramilitary force. Most of the photographs I do cover their presence and their overwhelming force in the city.
So, what do you take as part of the positive coming out of this? And your photographs, how would they be different than the mainstream media? How do you see them as different?
In the fact that the subject matter that I deal with is not sanctioned by a corporate media industry that is self-policed. It conforms to a narrow narrative that serves the interests of just a few individuals who basically just listen and just regurgitate what's given to them by the state and the federal government. These images that I have show a different side of the story. It shows the side of the story from the people that are actually affected by this type of force on our city streets. I don't think that is a very popular subject among editors of the Chicago Tribune or Chicago Sun-Times or any of the local news stations or any of the national and international U.S.-based corporate media outlets.
Give me some specific example. Could you sort of audio describe a picture you would have and how that would be different?
I think it's the even some of the local newspapers did record, you know, the fact that there were skirmishes with the police, but maybe captioned in such a way that leads to like an ambivalent reading of the subject matter. By a repeated concerted effort of recording the violence that took place on Sunday, May 20th, and the harassment and the standoff between peaceful protesters and the police all day on Saturday and somewhat on Sunday, I think it paints a different picture than what people are going to get in the newspaper by just looking at, say, one photograph that shows you know, the interaction between protesters and police with a caption that has been basically okayed by the editor.
This is WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1 FM. You're listening to Dr. Bob Fitrakis with The Other Side of the News. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Fitrakis in the studio. Ongoing interview with Christopher Costin, a photojournalist based in Columbus who's just returned from the NATO summit. Christopher, how'd you get involved in photojournalism?
Totally on my own and maybe by chance. I just bought my first digital camera years ago, and one thing led to another, and I realized...
Okay, let's decide this. How old were you?
Oh, probably about 24, 25 years old.
So you're 24, 25 at the time you bought the camera?
Correct.
And you just... It just pops in your head. I think I'm going to buy this digital... Was it for personal use? Or
it was for personal use, and only after a year of owning it and paying attention to the news media and realizing that we weren't getting photographs in particular of pertinent events around the country, you know, that affected stuff like civil rights and constitutional rights and domestic policy. And especially the opposition to certain aspects of domestic and foreign policy in this country, that we weren't getting images of these things, that I decided that I would start basically paying for myself to go on these trips to events and actions that spoke out against certain aspects of policy that affects the world and our citizens that we were not getting in the popular news media.
So what was the first event you went to consciously to take pictures to record the other side of the news or a different perspective on the media?
It would be the Pittsburgh G20 summit in 2009. And then follow the next, I wouldn't do too much beyond just local events. And then I took my camera and my photography equipment to New York City on September 17th of 2011 for the day that Occupy Wall Street started as just an idea in a park in southern Manhattan.
Do you recall some of the images you captured on that day?
Much like when we first went to Chicago, most of the images from the very first day of Occupy Wall Street were images of police helicopters, barricaded streets, an overwhelming police force, riot police, mounted police on horseback. And then when there was no access to Wall Street, I took a lot of images of people for the first time walking into Zuccotti Park in the financial district in southern Manhattan.
And now you've gone to Chicago. Where do you think your photojournalism could end up taking you? Do you have an idea on what you'd like to do?
I have every intention of sticking with it. going to future events and ensuring that people through any outlet I can, be it Facebook or Twitter or Flickr, through social media and through any type of contemporary media outlets that I can, that people, that I ensure that people can continue to see an actual fair and balanced version, a real fair and balanced version of images emanating from events that I believe are extremely important in our modern society. Images that I don't believe people are going to get from a conservative editor, you know, that works for one of the handful, you know, two or three major media monopolies in this country that have political motivations for censoring the images that come out of their news media.
Well, there's sort of an axiom in photojournalism is that you got to get real close to get the truth, but if you get too close, you end up injured or dead.
Well, yeah, you get clubbed in my case. So,
do you like to get close?
I do. And to me, it's worth the risk. To get images out there, I am willing to put my body on the line.
And you have any other problems in, at Occupy Wall Street or in Pittsburgh? How would you compare the difference between the police in Chicago?
I would say that every single time it's been, the police presence has been escalated. The amount of federal funding for the local police actions has been escalated, and the militarization of the police force in each succeeding event has been increasingly militarized. I mean, these people hardly look like police officers with soft hats and uniforms. Soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan are not getting the kind of armor that these police, local police departments are getting.
Well, when you saw and no doubt photographed the veterans from the Afghanistani war, Iraqi war, throwing back their medals, how do you capture something like that? What's going through your mind? What kind of picture are you trying to get?
Well, that was a highly emotional event, and you know, there were soldiers up there doing this as a way, kind of as their first step to both apologizing to the people of Iraq and Afghanistan for the immense damage they've caused in their countries, and also as kind of a first step in the healing process. So when capturing these kind of images, the idea is to keep the emotion intact. It was a very raw event, and I believe that emotion was captured in the photographs that I have to share.
In many ways, it's the almost exact opposite of the photos you'll see all over America this Memorial Day weekend, the standard photograph of a cemetery headstone with an American flag. It's the mandatory picture that we take, often with no real discussion over whether or not we should have been in those wars, because it's politicians who, of course, called those wars, and often, as your shirt says, when the rich wage war, it's the poor who die. Can you really capture that in photojournalism?
I believe you can, and I believe that it's important to get away from these ubiquitous images that basically restate a narrow narrative of what, say, Memorial Day means, and to break free from the restrictions on the way we interpret images from national holidays or from national state-sanctioned images of any kind. You know, when you get the exact same image or photo across the board, you know, you should probably be asking questions of why everything is exactly the same like that. And the idea that the only thing important about Memorial Day is mourning just the loss of troops without asking why they were they died or gave up their lives or they were injured or why they have PTSD now, or on the other side asking why aren't we memorializing, you know, the hundreds of thousands of people who also died in these wars, is a question that needs answers.
The civilians in Iraq?
Typically, yeah. The civilians of not just Iraq, but Afghanistan, the 215 U.S. military and CIA interventions since World War II. I mean, we've left just millions in our wake, and I think it's important to view Memorial Day as a way of basically reevaluating our history as a nation. And the photos I took, I did not want just to be another photo memorializing just the fact that United States soldiers had died, but I wanted it to be a question as why they died, and was it worth it, and what did we gain, and where are we going?
And John Stockwell, the former CIA station chief and member of the CIA director's executive staff, called it the Third World War. Those interventions all over the globe that killed literally millions of people during the Cold War. But in many of those cases, we don't have photographs of those mass killings of civilians, Phoenix Projects, because journalists, really were fearful from going into those environments. Are there limits that you draw on yourself, places that you would fear to tread?
My limits are based on basically my personal budget. I'm not backed by, some sort of news entity with deep pockets. I am personally willing to put my own life on the line if I had a way to go into these places, the battlegrounds for U.S. Foreign policy and power projection across the globe. I am personally willing to go into these places to get the images that I believe people need to see, but my personal capacity to do so is based on a financial limitation. But so I do see myself going into these places.
So you have no desire to be an embedded journalist, officially sanctioned?
No.
Assigned to a U.S. military unit?
No, I think that's a dangerous concept, in the sense that it undoubtedly, when those programs were devised, it undoubtedly would form a sort of camaraderie and comradeship between the journalist and the people he's supposed to be objectively analyzing, and I think it's hard to remain objective under those circumstances.
Talking to Christopher Costin, an unembedded photojournalist based in Columbus, Ohio, who has snapped pictures for the freepress.org. Are you thinking of writing more?
I am thinking of writing. I do currently write on a personal level. I try to write good accounts of events that I have been to and my personal views of it. I do intend on expanding into the world of writing along with photojournalism.
Are you thinking about going to those highly restrictive events, the two major parties, the two major corporate capitalist party, the Democratic Party, and of course the Republican Party, and there's been problems for protesters in the last couple elections, people exercising their rights to free speech. So you're thinking of going to either of those events?
I do have plans on going to both Florida and North Carolina this year to cover those events. And in hopes that the New York City incident with the RNC does not repeat itself in Florida and the 1968 incident in Chicago does not repeat itself, but I will be there.
Thank you, Christopher Costin, for appearing on The Other Side of the News.
Thank you for having me.
This is Bob Fitrakis urging you to take a look at freepress.org, where Christopher's photographs will be displayed. That's freepress.org. This program is brought to you in part by the Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism, a 501c3, which you can contribute to. Peace.